Chapter 31. Betty came with the lanthorn, and next day came, and next, and so forth, until a day arrived, when the lanthorn was out, when Betty came no more. All that little company sank to rest under the daisies, whither some folks will presently follow them. How did they live to be so old, those good people? Moi cui vos peril, I perfectly recollect old Mr. Gilbert, who had been to sea with Captain Cook, and Captain Cook, as you justly observe, dear miss, quoting out of your Angnall's questions, was murdered by the natives of O.E., anno 1779. Ah! Don't you remember his picture, standing on the seashore, in tights and gaiters, with a musket in his hand, pointing to his people, not to fire from the boats, whilst a great tattooed savage is going to stab him in the back? Don't you remember those hours dancing before him, and the other officers at the great Attahite ball? Don't you know that Cook was at the siege of Quebec, with the glorious Wolfe, who fought under the Duke of Cumberland, whose royal father was a distinguished officer at Ramillies, before he commanded in chief at detention? Huzzah! Give it them, my lads. My horse is down? Then I know I shall not run away. Do the French run? Then I die content. Stop. Whoa. Quo mirapus? My Pegasus is galloping off, goodness knows where, like His Majesty's charger at detention. How do these rich historical and personal reminiscences come out of the subject at present in hand? What is that subject, by the way? My dear friend, if you look at the last Asaken, though you may leave it alone, and I shall not be in the least surprised or offended, if you look at the last paper, where the writer imagines Athos and Porthos, Delgety and Ivanhoe, Amelia and Sir Charles Grandison, Don Quixote and Sir Roger, walking in at the garden window, you will at once perceive that novels, and their heroes and heroines are our present subject of discourse, into which we will presently plunge. Are you one of us, dear sir, and do you love novel reading? To be reminded of your first novel will surely be a pleasure to you. Hush! I never read quite to the end of my first, The Cottish Chiefs. I couldn't. I peeped in an alarmed furtive manner at some of the closing pages. Miss Porter, like a kind dear tender-hearted creature, would not have Wallace's head chopped off at the end of Vol. 5. She made him die in prison, asterisk and if I remember right, protesting I have not read the book for 42 or 3 years, Robert Bruce made a speech to his soldiers, in which he said, and Bannockburn shall equal Cambuskineth dot asterisk asterisk asterisk, but I repeat I could not read the end of the 5th volume of that dear delightful book for crying. Good heavens! It was as sad as going back to school. Asterisk I find, on reference to the novel, that Sir William died on the scaffold, not in prison. His last words were, my prayer is heard. Life's cord is cut by heaven. Helen! Helen! May heaven preserve my country, and apostrophe he stopped. He fell. And with that mighty shock the scaffold shook to its foundations. Asterisk asterisk the remark of Bruce, which I protest I had not read for 42 years, I find to be as follows. And this was uttered by the English heralds, Bruce turned to Ruthven, with an heroic smile, let him come, my brave barons, and he shall find that Bannockburn shall page with Cambuskineth. Apostrophe in the same amiable author's famous novel of Hadas of Warsaw, there is more crying than in any novel I ever remember to have read. See, for example, the last page. Dot dot dot, capable of speaking, Thaddeus led his wife back to her carriage. Dot dot dot, his tears gushed out in spite of himself, and mingling with hers, poured those thanks, those assurances, of animated approbation through her heart, which made it even ache with excess of happiness. Dot dot dot, and a sentence or two further. Kosciusko did bless him, and embalmed the benediction with a shower of tears. The glorious Scott cycle of romances came to me some 4 or 5 years afterwards, and I think boys of our year were specially fortunate in coming upon those delightful books at that special time, when we could best enjoy them. Oh, that sunshiny bench on half holidays, with Claverhouse or Vanho for a companion. I have remarked a very late day some little men in a great state of delectation over the romances of Captain Mayne Reid, and Gustav Amert's prairie and Indian stories, and during occasional holiday visits, lurking off to bed with the volume under their arms. But are those Indians and warriors so terrible as our Indians and warriors were? I say, are they? Young gentlemen, mind, I do not say they are not. But as an oldster I can be heartily thankful for the novels of the 110 Geo. IV. Let us say, and so downward to a period not unremote. Let us see there is, first, our dear Scott. Whom do I love in the works of that dear old master? Amo, the Baron of Bradwarden and Fergus. Captain Waverley is certainly very mild. Amo Ivanho, Locksley, the Templar. Amo Quentin Durward, and especially Quentin's uncle, who brought the boar to bay. I forget the gentleman's name. I have never cared for the master of Ravenswood, or fetched his hat out of the water, since he dropped it there, when I last met him, circa 1825. Amo Saladin and the Scotch Knight in the Alisman. The Sultan Best. Amo Claverhouse. Amo Major Dalgetty. Delightful Major. To think of him is to desire to jump up, run to the book, and get the volume down from the shelf. About all those heroes of Scott, what a manly bloom there is, and honorable modesty. They are not at all heroic. They seem to blush somehow in their position of hero, and as it were to say, since it must be done, here goes. They are handsome, modest, upright, simple, courageous, not too clever. If I were a mother, which is absurd, I should like to be mother-in-law to several young men of the Walter Scott hero sort. Much as I like those most unassuming, manly, unpretending gentlemen, I have to own that I think the heroes of another writer, viz. Leather Stocking, Uncas, Hard Heart, Tom Coffin, are quite the equals of Scott's men. Perhaps Leather Stocking is better than anyone in Cott's lot. Lalonde Caribbean is one of the great prize men of fiction. He ranks with your Uncle Toby, Sir Roger de Coverley, Falstaff heroic figures, all American or British, and the artist has deserved well of his country who devised them. At school, in my time, there was a public day, when the boys' relatives, an examining bigwig or two from the universities, old schoolfellows, and so forth, came to the place. The boys were all paraded. Prizes were administered, each lad being in a new suit of clothes and magnificent dandies, I promise you, some of us were. Oh, the chubby cheeks, clean collars, glossy new raiment, beaming faces, glorious in youth fit to Ricoelum bright with truth, and mirth, and honor. To see 100 boys marshaled in a chapel or old hall, to hear their sweet fresh voices when they chant, and look in their brave calm faces. I say, does not the sight and sound of them smite you, somehow, with a pang of exquisite kindness? Well, as about boys, so about novelists. I fancy the boys of Parnassus School all paraded. I am a lower boy myself in that academy. I like our fellows to look well, upright, gentlemanlike. There is Master Fieldingy with the black eye. What a magnificent build of a boy. There is Master Scott, one of the heads of the school. Did you ever see the fellow more hardy and manly? Yonder lean, shambling, cadaverous lad, who is always borrowing money, telling lies, leering after the housemaids, is Master Lawrence Stern, a bishop's grandson, and himself intended for the church. For shame, you little reprobate. But what a genius the fellow has. Let him have a sound flogging, and as soon as the young scamp is out of the whipping room, give him a gold medal. Such would be my practice, if I were Dr. Birch, and master of the school. Let us drop this school metaphor, this birch and all pertaining thereto. Our subject, I beg leave to remind the reader's humble servant, is novel heroes and heroines. How do you like your heroes, ladies? Gentlemen, what novel heroines do you prefer? When I set this essay going, I sent the above question to two of the most inveterate novel readers of my acquaintance. The gentleman refers me to Miss Austin. The lady says a those, Guy Livingston, and, pardon my rosy blushes, Colonel Esmond, and owns that in youth she was very much in love with Valancourt.
Valancourt?
And who was he? Cry the young people. Valancourt, my dears, was the hero of one of the most famous romances which ever was published in this country. The beauty and elegance of Valancourt made your young grandmama's gentle hearts to beat with respectful sympathy. He and his glory have passed away. Ah, woe is me, that the glory of novels should ever decay, that dust should gather round them on the shelves, that the annual checks from Messrs. The publishers should dwindle. Inquire at Mudie's, or the London Library, who asks for the histories of Udolpho now? Have not even the histories of Paris ceased to frighten? Alas, our novels are but for a season, and I know characters whom a painful modesty forbids me to mention, who shall go to limbo along with Valancourt, and Oricourt and Hadas of Warsaw. A dear old sentimental friend, with whom I discoursed on the subject of novels yesterday, said that her favorite hero was Lord Orville, in Villena, that novel which Dr. Johnson loved so. I took down the book from a moldy old crypt at a club, where Mrs. Barbauld's novelists repose. And this is the kind of thing, ladies and gentlemen, in which your ancestors found pleasure. And here, whilst I was looking for the books, I was followed by Lord Orville. He shut the door, after he came in, and, approaching me with a look of anxiety, said, "Is this true, Miss Anville, are you going?"
I believe so, my lord,
said I, still looking for the books. So suddenly, so unexpectedly, must I lose you? No great loss, my lord, said I, endeavoring to speak cheerfully. Is it possible, said he, gravely, Miss Anville can doubt my sincerity? I can't imagine, cried I, what Mrs. Selwyn has done with those books. Would to heaven, continued he, I might flatter myself he would allow me to prove it. I must run upstairs, cried I, greatly confused, and ask what else he has done with them. You are going then, cried he, taking my hand, and you give me not the smallest hope of any return. Will you not, my too lovely friend, will you not teach me, with fortitude like your own, to support your absence? My lord, cried I, endeavoring to disengage my hand, pray let me go. I will, cried he, to my inexpressible confusion, dropping on one knee, if you wish me to leave you. Oh, my lord, exclaimed I, rise, I beseech you, rise. Surely your lordship is not so cruel as to mock me.
Mock you.
Repeated earnestly, no, I revere you. I esteem and admire you above all human beings. You are the friend to whom my soul is attached, as to its better half. You are the most amiable, the most perfect of women, and you are dearer to me than language has the power of telling. I attempt not to describe my sensations at that moment. I scarce breathed. I doubted if I existed. The blood forsook my cheeks, and my feet refused to sustain me. Lord Orville, hastily rising, supported me to a chair upon which I sank almost lifeless. I cannot write the scene that followed, though every word is engraven on my heart, but his protestations, his expressions, were too flattering for repetition, nor would he, in spite of my repeated efforts to leave him, suffer me to escape. In short, my dear sir, I was not proof against his solicitations, and he drew from me the most sacred secret of my heart. Contrast this old perfumed, powdered D'Arblay conversation with the present modern talk. If the two young people wished to hide their emotions nowadays, and express themselves in modest language, the story would run. Whilst I was looking for the books, Lord Orville came in. He looked uncommonly down in the mouth, as he said, "Is this true, Miss Anville? Are you going to cut?" To absquatulate, Lord Orville, said I, still pretending that I was looking for the books. "You are very quick about it," said he. "Guess it's no great loss," I remarked, as cheerfully as I could. "You don't think I'm chaffing?" said Orville, with much emotion. "What has Mrs. Selwyn done with the books?" I went on. "What, going," said he, "and going for good. I wish I was such a good plucked one as you, Miss Anville, and see, the conversation, you perceive, might be easily written down to this key, and if the hero and heroine were modern, they would not be suffered to go through their dialogue on stilts, but would converse in the natural graceful way at present customary. By the way, what a strange custom that is in modern lady novelists to make the men bully the women. In the time of Miss Porter and Madame D'Arblay, we have respect, profound bows and curtsies, graceful courtesy, from men to women. In the time of Miss Brant, absolute rudeness. Is it true, mesdames, that you like rudeness, and are pleased at being ill-used by men? I could point to more than one lady novelist who so represents you. Other people may not much like this extract, madam, from your favorite novel, but when you come to read it, you will like it. I suspect that when you read that book which you so love, you read it adieu. Did you not yourself pass a winter at Bath, when you were the belle of the assembly? Was there not a Lord Orville in your case too? As you think of him, 11 lustres pass away. You look at him with the bright eyes of those days, and your hero stands before you, the brave, the accomplished, the simple, the true gentleman, and he makes the most elegant of bows to one of the most beautiful young women the world ever saw, and he leads you out to the cotillon, to the dear unforgotten music. Hark to the horns of Elfland, blowing, blowing. Bon Vieille, you remember their melody, and your heartstrings thrill with it still. Of your heroic heroes, I think our friend Monseigneur Athos, Count de la Fere, is my favorite. I have read about him from sunrise to sunset with the utmost contentment of mind. He has passed through how many volumes? 40? 50? I wish for my part there were 100 more, and would never tire of him reselling prisoners, punishing ruffians, and running scoundrels through the midriff with his most graceful rapier. Ah, Athos, Porthos, and Aramis, you are a magnificent trio. I think I like D'Artagnan in his own memoirs best. I bought him years and years ago, price 5 pence, in a Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.